Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
One of the challenges often isn't what to treat, but it's how to ensure that patients successfully move through a complicated healthcare system involving referring doctors, other specialists, including endocrinologists, maintaining follow-up, and then coming back in when they need to on schedule.
Today, Drs. Garg and Mehta joined the podcast to discuss systems of care and patient flow for patients with retinal disease in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Sunir Garg. I'm a retina specialist and professor of ophthalmology and chief of the retina service at Wills Eye Hospital and Thomas Jefferson University, and I'm a partner with Mid-Atlantic Retina here in Philadelphia.
And I'm Dr. Sonia Mehta. I'm a retina surgeon at Wills Eye Hospital, and I'm also associate professor of ophthalmology at Thomas Jefferson University and partner at Mid-Atlantic Retina here in Philadelphia.
Thanks for joining us. For many retinal conditions, both our understanding of the diseases as well as our abilities to treat patients have advanced rapidly. But one of the challenges often isn't what to treat, but it's how to ensure that patients successfully move through a complicated healthcare system involving referring doctors, other specialists, including endocrinologists, maintaining follow-up, and then coming back in when they need to on schedule. Sonia, ready to get started?
Yes, absolutely.
So I'd like to start from the perspective of a busy retina specialist. And one of the things that we've seen over the past 20 years is we're in eye centers, often not in the hospital anymore. But we know that by the time a patient comes to see us, we're often one of a bunch of different doctors that they see, particularly our patients with diabetes. How do you help patients navigate those? And what's your interaction like with our other physician colleagues?
Yeah, great question. So those relationships are so critical for the healthcare and visual outcomes of the patient. I think of retina like a team sport where we have multiple providers trying to provide the best visual outcomes for the patients. And the retina, we see, as we know, retinal diseases are ocular manifestations of systemic diseases like diabetic retinopathy or retinal vascular occlusions. So we can treat the ocular complications, but to get the best outcomes, long-term success rates, it often involves collaborating with their physicians as well, their internal medicine, endocrinology, cardiology team. And so that's critical for getting them the best success rates for the long term.
I think that's a really critically important point. From our perspective, you know, as we're doctors first, and the most important thing we can do for our patients is to help them stay healthy. Because if their blood pressure is good and their cholesterol is good, and if they have diabetes, their sugars are good, many times they won't need help from us in the first place.
Right.
Even still, it's hard for patients. You know, a lot of our patients are older. They have to come in pretty often. Parking in the city can be a bit of a problem. And then there's co-pays and all the other kind of obstacles that can inhibit patients from getting care that they need. Any suggestions or things that you found to be helpful, or how do you think we make it easier for our patients to access our care?
Right. Great question. So studies have looked at this, like how do we get patients in for their retinal care and what are the barriers that kind of keep them away? And I think accessing retinal care, subspecialty care, can be difficult for patients for various reasons. Sometimes it's socioeconomic. Sometimes it's educational barriers. Other times it's insurance. They may have healthcare coverage, but it's not enough coverage to get them in. And then some simpler things like transportation and, like you said, parking, or they rely on caregivers, their elderly caregivers, and they require their kids. How many times do you and I hear, Sunir, where a patient says they want to come back in and see us, but they rely on their son or daughter to bring them in, and that person works? And so they have to work around all these issues to be able to get in and get their treatments done on time. Sometimes we'll hear about insurance companies covering transportation in for patients, which is great when that happens. But patients have to navigate this complex system in order to, we may have wonderful treatments available that can give great visual outcomes, but if the patients aren't coming in to see us, then we can't get them the care that they need.
I think that's such an important point. And I think you've done a lot of work with advocacy, both on a state as well as a national level. And I think that's really important to help reduce some of these barriers.
Yeah. So one of the things that we, though we've done at a state society level, like we all know that diabetic eye screening is very important for diabetics, and yet only 40% of patients get referred from primary care into ophthalmology for their eye screenings. And of those, only 20% are actually getting in and completing their eye screening checkups. And so in order to help improve access to care, we started at Woolseye a diabetic eye screening day, where it's a dedicated day where retina specialists and ophthalmologists are available to screen diabetics. They can just come on in, no insurance issues. The day is available for people to come in and get their screenings done. And that spread to other institutions in Philadelphia, where it became a Philadelphia-wide eye event where Penn, Temple, Woolseye all participated together. And then it spread across the state where all the academic centers, University of Pittsburgh, Medical Center, Geisinger, all became part of this diabetic eye screening. And finally, now it's spread to adjacent states, Delaware, New Jersey, and healthcare professionals like the ophthalmologists have met with legislators, and it's been passed into law just in April that in April there will be a diabetic eye screening day just dedicated to diabetic vision screening. So that's been passed into law now.
Well, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Yep. Yes. Thank you. So since the pandemic, there's been interest in teleophthalmology, remote screening, home OCT imaging, and AI detection tools. Which innovations do you think have the greatest potential to improve access and continuity of retinal care over the next few years?
So I think any or all of these things can be really helpful. One of the things I'm really excited about is home-based monitoring. We know that there's going to be soon the ability to have an OCT, which is one of our primary methods of seeing patients' macular status, to be done in the patient's home, uploaded kind of seamlessly to the cloud. And one of the things I'm really excited about is integrating AI with that to flag changes in the OCT so that patients who are doing well and have stable maculas don't really need to come in as much. Mm-hmm. But if there's a problem, we can be notified and the patient can be alerted that there's something going on that they should come into the retina specialist's office for further evaluation, potentially treatment. I think that'll be really helpful and really help to maybe mitigate some of the hurdles with patients coming in and having the adult child take a day off of work and
right.
The transportation issues of getting a parent who's no longer as mobile as they once were out of the car and into the office and through the office system. I think that'll be a really big deal. I'm also looking forward to AI hopefully helping us go through the great volume of images that we get and help us stratify how are patients doing over time, how's their vision changing, how are their OCTs changing over time. Because right now, I end up doing all that work manually, where mm-hmm. I end up scrolling with my mouse button, circa 1995, and looking through the trends over time. But if that could be automated in the background, I think that'd be really helpful.
Yeah, that's great. And we have now AI tools to assist us when we don't have medications to treat patients in the clinic or surgical options. We have some clinical trial options now for patients, and AI is helping us identify who those patients are, which clinical trials would match them better to help decrease number of office visits and coordination of care for like caregivers. So I think it's only going to enhance our ability to care for patients and give them better visual outcomes.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to look forward to that as well.
Yeah.
So, Sam, one of the things that I keep reading about in the newspaper is about the role of AI for a whole bunch of different fields, not just what we do, but even amongst ophthalmologists and retina specialists in particular. And I've heard some people talk about AI eating our lunch and potentially making us obsolete. What's your take on that?
So I think it will augment what we do is my take. For example, there are AI-guided retinal imaging for diabetic retinopathy screenings now. They've been implemented in Boston and in other areas of the country. And it's enhancing retinal imaging cameras now in primary care clinics or endocrinology clinics or laboratories that can take a picture, and the AI algorithm analyzes it and generates, does this patient have diabetic retinopathy or not? And they can be somewhere between 90 to 95% sensitive for detecting diabetic retinopathy screening. And what we're seeing is that those patients can then they have a better chance of getting over to ophthalmology and retina for care. So where we said 20% earlier are getting from primary care and completing their eye screenings, now with AI-assisted technology, those rates increase to 60%. And so that's huge. Just getting those patients into the pipeline and getting them into treatment is very helpful. And then the other thing that I do, like just a practical takeaway to help with patients, is any diabetic that I meet, I try at the first encounter, whether they have eye disease or not, just to point out, how do we keep good vision in diabetes? And number one is good blood glycemic and blood pressure control, which we work with our teammates, the internists, endocrinologists, on that. And then the second is coming in for your eye checkup as scheduled, because when we have great treatments available now for diabetic retinopathy, detecting disease on time and getting the treatments on time is the how we preserve good vision. And that's to help improve compliance rates and keeping patients on target and trying to help prevent loss of follow-up.
That's amazing. From a public health perspective, that's going to be hugely helpful. Thanks for joining me today, Sonia. This has been great. And thank you for joining us for our discussions on systems of care and patient flow for patients with retinal disease and for those of us who diagnose and treat them.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PeerDirect.com. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Garg and Mehta. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.